And next we have Susan Papps, near Yelland, of Yelland and Papps in the Barossa Valley. Good morning, Susan. Thank you for joining us.
Hello, Jill. How are you going?
I am very well, thank you. I've wanted you guys on the show for so long. I fell in love with your wines a long time ago, and I'm not going to admit when, but it was your Vermentino that actually that got me so inspired. When I went to your cellar door, this was back about 10 years ago, I guess, and you actually had three Vermentinos for tasting, and I'd never had that experience. Yeah. And it's one of my favorite varietals. I'm like, I was recommended to go. And I understand you don't actually make Vermentino anymore, but that's kind of getting ahead of ourselves.
Yeah.
But yeah. Can I just ask, why not?
We started doing Vermentino in 2011, and we made it for quite a few years. We were crazy enough to make it three different ways. So everything we did here, we probably either did the hardest or the most complicated way, but it probably was the most satisfying. But look, we loved it. We actually really thought that it suited Australian culture, Australian eating, Australian heat. And I suppose we made it very much in a European style. And I suppose the last couple of years, we kind of saw the Australian way of Vermentino probably going a little bit more to the fruitier style of it. And we were quite different. So we actually, look, we make, to be honest, we make all of our wines ourselves, Michael and I, in the winery. And whites are complicated. We love making whites, but white wine is harder. It's harder than red. And I tell you, there's a couple of weeks in the winery where Michael and I don't talk, and that's called the 2 weeks of white. It is just, it's on. Like, so we kind of wanted to take a bit of pressure off ourselves and basically focus on Roussanne, which is probably more of our love, is Roussanne.
You seriously just talking about all of my favourites, Roussanne, pretty much anything from Rhone.
Yes.
I absolutely adore, I mean, whether it's Grenache, Roussanne, Marsanne, Viognier, I'm a massive fan of all of those. And you've actually got a very strong focus on Grenache as well, hardly surprising, being Barossa. Just before we get on to the Roussanne, et cetera, I think it's very important for everyone to know that you took out the best Grenache, best small winery and best single vineyard in the Barossa Valley Wine Show last year. So congratulations.
Thanks.
Three enormous accolades. So clearly Grenache is your thing now. Talk us through your approach to Grenache. Why is it so good?
For us, you know, we started making Grenache right from the start of our journey. And I think 2011 was a real pivotal year for us, that we really had to learn very quickly what to do in difficult years, because we don't have overly super difficult years in the Barossa like other people. We also wanted, we could see our style of wine that we wanted to make lighter, brighter, more textural styles of wines. So basically from 2011 onwards, we really started picking wines a lot earlier when the vine's in balance, picking on natural acid. Here we try and do not a real lot in the winery. We do a lot of work in the winery, but we try not to muddle with the wines too much, and we pick early in the vineyard to retain beautiful, bright acids. So I suppose that's been our thing. We've been trying to make this Grenache. We've been making a brighter textural Grenache probably since 2011. It's only now probably, you know, people are really getting to understand more European styles of Grenache, I think.
Yeah, yes, and really appreciating them. Mm. They're extremely food friendly, aren't they? And they really do. If you look at the food that we have in Australia, I mean, so Grenache is definitely one of my absolute faves, and I had a lovely one last night. You know, you can pair it with Asian, any form of Asian, any form of barbecued roasted meats. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously pork and things like that goes beautifully. It's kind of like anything that Pinot Noir suits, it suits. Anything a Shiraz suits, it suits. So it's sort of like across the game. And of course you can pop in the fridge, cool it down, and treat it more as a you know, as the cool red. So it ticks a lot of boxes. It's very affordable, you know, and accessible. Like, it, you can pick up a really good Grenache in a bottle shop, not as good as going to Cellador, of course, but it is something that it means that it's open to everybody. And I think that obviously helps as well.
Yeah, I think there's a big, there's a lot of talk at the moment that, you know, Mark and I believe that Grenache very well suits the Brossa. It is really quite hot here. Well, it normally is. This summer's been a bit different. But, you know, it doesn't need as much water. And I think this is something that we look towards the future. And I would definitely hope that Grenache soon sits up there at the same price as Shiraz, to be honest. So I think that the wheels will start turning very soon on that.
I'm sure it will. I mean, if you look at, my husband asked me yesterday, he's a big Grenache lover as well. And he said, in my opinion, what makes a good Grenache? And I'm like, you know, it's a pretty open question, but it's also a good one. I guess the way that I answer that is a good old vine and the right area. So, you know, you go, okay, Barossa, Blewett Springs and McLaren Vale. Yeah. But if you get like a good old vine, then that's a good, very good start. How would you answer that question? Because I'm sure it's a much better answer than mine.
Oh, look, I think Grenache, I've been saying for years, is that varietal that can be made so many different ways. I don't think there's anything right or wrong, but I think it can either be really super light and bright and crunchy, all the way to the other end to being quite big and robust, and anything in between. I think it's the varietal that anyone could pick up a bottle and find the style that they like with this varietal. And I think if you want a really big Grenache, there's certainly big Grenache out there. If you want something light and bright to chill in your bucket on a Sunday, there's loads of that. I think it's just so versatile. What makes it good is what you like. You know, that's what makes it good, is what hits the spot for what you're wanting. Yeah. Sunday lunch, you want something really quite chilled, light and bright. So I think it's what you absolutely love and, you know, that you enjoy.
Totally. I knew you would answer it better than I would. So you just mentioned before you'd like to see Grenache kind of up on that same sort of level as some of those heavy-hitting Shiraz in more iconic sense. What do you think it would take in order for that to happen?
Well, to be honest, you know, the same amount of work for a grower in Shiraz or Grenache, maybe less water, but it's the same amount of work. I think it grows so well here that it needs to be supported, and supporting that and to keep vines in the ground means we need to pay growers the same as Shiraz or the same as other varietals.
So there needs to be equality there. Like, it's actually, this is nothing to do with wine. This is actually the approach and the mindset. Okay, yep, sorry.
Yeah. And there is different, I think it's the same as Shiraz. There's different qualities of Grenache and there's different qualities of Shiraz. So, you know, Blewett Springs is producing amazing Grenache as well, and that's really put a name out there. But there's some beautiful, you know, we have here in the Brossa, like lying in the sands, some exceptional Grenache. Yes. So I think it will get there. Absolutely. And I think there's a lot of us trying to work towards to achieve that, because it deserves that spot as well.
Yeah, good. Yeah. Well, I tell you what, I can see it happening. I think it would be a wonderful journey to watch. We've had a couple of text messages in for you, Susan.
Yes.
So this is from Christopher again. Hi, Jill. I have met Susan a few times at events like the Good Food and Wine Show and Barossa Be Consumed. Susan's great to talk to. A question for Susan. Does she still source fruit from David Matern in Greenock? And how did she get access to his amazing fruit in the first place?
Absolutely. Dave Materni was our first grower in 2005. So we're still with Dave Materni. We take the Greenock Shiraz, which used to be called the Devoat. Now it's the single vineyard. That's a continual. We've taken every vintage off that same block. So if you pick up a Devoat and now it's called the Single Vineyard Grenache Trust. That's all Day of Maternity's fruit. Every year you pick up that wine. No change in winemaker here, no change in vineyard, no change in practices. All you will see is a beautiful reflection of vintages. And we also purchase from Dave Materni is the Roussan. So all our Roussan is coming from Dave Materni. And also our limited Cuvée, which is our top Shiraz, that actually is all from Dave Materni. So absolutely, he's a big part of our business. We support, you know, three family vineyards here in the valley, which are just growers, and we wouldn't have a business without them. So yeah.
Well, there we go. So that's a good answer to that. So Christopher, yes, definitely still doing, and well done. And I apologise for mispronouncing his name. Well, that is a good segue into the next question we've had from Kim. Good morning, Kim. He says, hi, Jill. Could you please ask Susan her take on the style they are looking for in their Roussan?
The style that we look for in our Roussan, I suppose if you go personally to us and our style, we are very Chablis, Meursault, Burgundy drinkers. So you will definitely see with our Roussan that we love the elegance and we love the texture. So we make three Roussans. Our little Blanc is kind of a very textural, easy drinking, affordable little wine that has great texture to it. A single vineyard, we do two picks on our single vineyard usually, one to just get that nice bright acid and freshness, and the second pick actually brings in that back palate and the fullness as well. And then we kind of do the third Roussan on occasional years, which is the limited Cuvée. That is a real richer Bourgogne style style of Roussan. So texture is number one.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that I can imagine that would be very special. So the last year that you produced the limited Cuvée Roussan was 2016, right?
2016, so yeah.
And you still have some in stock?
Yes.
So how do people buy your wines? Obviously through online and cellar door. Do you, I'll touch on this later, I know you do stock in some excellent bars and restaurants. Do you sell through retail?
Definitely. So you'll definitely find our wines like in Sydney, in retail places like Le Pont Wine Store, definitely will have a majority of our wines. There's a few onlines that you might find our wines directly through. But, you know, you can always go through our website. Our cellar door, we only open once a year now. So wow. We closed that back in 2018. So we are trying to open that up every October now so people can come in and try the new releases.
I love that. So you open in October for, how long do you have it open? Like the month of October?
So last year we had it open for 2 weeks. That was our first year opening. And so we closed at the end of 2018, and then this year we'll try and open for 4 weeks. We might try and see if we can squeeze in two little orchard lunches on Sundays just to welcome people back and they can try all the wines.
Okay, so this is actually a great impetus to make sure you're in the Barossa in October, ladies and gentlemen.
Definitely.
Could be freezing, could be hot, so you know, pack appropriately. You just don't know on Barossa, do you? I actually, my little story there at the cellar door, so obviously you saw I had a little bit of a quip when you say you don't have the cellar door now. So back when I did visit, it was actually, your cellar door was almost like the lounge room of your house. And it was kind of really interesting because you were very new and and, you know, of course, this was the Three Vermentino experience. And you, on a chalkboard, you just had, like, the Three Vermentinos written. And it's like, that's all you have for tasting. I'm like, that's all I want to taste. And I had this, I stayed there for ages chatting with your husband, Michael. And I think your son Would that make sense?
Yes.
Been there? Yes. Okay, right. So I was there with my mum. We were having a great old chat. And but I love that literally this experience, this amazing wine experience, was happening in the lounge room of your house. Like, it was very cool. But, you know, how do you think it's impacting people being able to appreciate your wines, not having a cellar door full time? How is that? What determines, you know, to not actually have a cellar door for most of the year?
We changed everything in 2018. We had a 6-day week tasting room open and staff. We had two young children. It was a very busy cellar door, which sounds fabulous to everybody else. But it was just crazy, and I wasn't that well, and we kind of a bit ran ourselves into the ground. And I think the thing that really made a big difference is my husband broke his leg 3/4 of the way through vintage. And then later on that year, I broke my leg and had a pulmonary embolism, and it just kind of made us pivot our business very much to where we wanted it to be. You know, as much as we did make people feel at home, like we have two cottages on our property, our main house is an 1846 built house, and the cottage where you were was our tasting room come cottage, which we set up to make it feel like you were at home.
Yes.
And it just got very, very hectic. And so 2018, we closed the cellar door, and we basically just went back to the two of us, basically to get back to what, when we first walked in and bought this property in 2010, what we wanted to achieve. And we could see that we had gone off on a different road, and we wanted to just get back onto the road that we wanted to be on. So we closed up and just did private tastings for quite a while.
Fair enough, and obviously it's working for you. Look, anyone who hasn't tried your wines must give them a go. There's definitely a certain elegance and definitely very high quality with your wines. And I do love your Rhone focus. Of course, you've got the Grenache and the Rossan, but you also have the Sansot, which I love. Am I pronouncing that correctly?
Well, sometimes here we pronounce it Sinso, because that's how people, you know.
That's how it's spelled.
We're a bit Australian. It is Sanso. Technically it's Sanso, but sometimes we call it both, just so you can identify to a customer so they can connect to what we're all talking about. So
yeah, sure. Look, that is a varietal that I absolutely love. I love it mono. I love it as a rosé, which I believe you do. Mm-hmm. I also love it as a blend. And what I do like is that instead of doing the GSM, you replace the S with a C. So you essentially do a GCM, right?
Yeah.
So tell us about your Sansot and why you started planting it. You obviously love it a lot.
So we started buying fruit off of a grower, the Sontag family, which is about 7 minutes away from our place. We actually initially went to their place. They had some Mataro available. And then we got chatting to them, and we had gone down to McLaren Vale and purchased some Sansot many years before, and we loved it. We thought, this is what our brand and our wines need. And then Pete Sontag said he'll plant some up, so we're like, that's awesome. So that's actually off a very young vineyard. So we have been dying to make a straight Sansot, and 22 gave us that opportunity. And then, you know, we always have, you know, for the last three vintages, put it into our Vin de Soif. It makes Vin de Soif, Vin de Soif. Mm-hmm. And then last year, we decided we hadn't made a rosé since 2016. And we thought, oh, what a magic, a Sinso Mourvèdre Provence style, textured. It's just, it is, you just need to sit under the fig tree, have some great cheese, and maybe think you're somewhere else in the world, And that's where that rosé takes you to. So
you really are speaking my language. So there's this French connection that you have, or the love of them. Connection's not the right word. Where does it come from? Apart from obviously Barossa is a great area to grow a lot of these Rhone varietals, but why specifically with you guys? Like, is there a connection with France somewhere back in the day?
There is absolutely no connection. We were never fortunate the way we started our careers. We haven't gone and done vintages in France. I think there's a love of when you find the style that you absolutely connect with and the wines that you drink that drive you to make the wines that you make.
Yeah.
That it's a connection that we feel that we adore and we love, and that's about it, to be honest. It's just that style when you find the home of your style that sits very well with what you love. That's basically it. I wish I could say I was half French. I'm not.
No, the accent wasn't giving it away. When was the last time that you've been over to France, that you've actually been to the Rhone Valley?
We've never been to the Rhone Valley. This has been a plan, and our plan is getting in place very soon to get over there. So this is, you know, our thing here has, I mean, I went to France many, many years ago when I lived overseas, but our plan is now, you know, the thing is, for the last, you know, 10, 15 years, it's been building this business, which we started ourselves from scratch, that you just haven't had the opportunities and the affordability to just do that. But that is definitely in the plans for the next year or two. It will happen. So we'll get to back where we really would feel very much at home, I think.
I actually just had a fabulous 3 weeks in France back in August and September. And it had been a long time since I've been over there, and it was sensational. So I do hope that you embark on it. So last question before we wrap. What other varietals, whether they are French or Rhone or anything else, that you would be very intrigued to look at over the next couple of years?
We've just planted Grenache Blanc on our vineyard here. Okay. So definitely Grenache Blanc is something that we really want to start working with. So we're probably a couple of years away. We planted them last Christmas out the front, and that will be something that will go into our little Blanc as well. So we're actually more trying to rein in a little bit. As you know from years ago when you come here, we actually did Primitivo, we did Dolcetta, we did, you know, back in 14, 16, we did probably 14 different varietals here.
And a big focus on Italian varietals, of course.
Yes, we did have a little bit of a moment where we were focused on the Italian varietals, and then we come back and kind of we are, you know, the last 6 years is about reining in your business, reining in, trying to make sure you're keeping creativity in the wines and the winery, but also you've actually really had to put your business hat on pretty hard and rein in the different things that you do.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Look, Susan, this has been a really, really fun chat. I'm glad I've finally been able to get you on. And, thank you for the questions that were coming in. I love that you've actually met Christopher before. Keep up the good work. Your wines are absolutely stunning. And for anyone who doesn't know it in the Barossa, Yelanda Paps, it's Yelland and Papps. So check them out. Definitely worth a shot. Thank you very much. What's on for the rest of your weekend?
We are cooking fig jam, mulberry jam. It is just crazy here at the moment. and then we go back to work tomorrow.
it sounds nice. As long as there's a nice glass of wine somewhere.
Absolutely. I'm sure there'll be a glass of wine somewhere.
There will be. Well, look, Susan, thank you so much for your time. Have a great weekend, and I'm sure we'll get you back on the show later on in the year.